SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Who's your Don Bradman? A podcast from SBS. In each episode, we'll have a look at champions, athletes, idolized by millions, that you might not know about. The kind of champion or hero next door. Welcome to Who's Your Don Bradman? As this is the last episode of this series, we decided to talk to you about one of our icon at SBS, someone that inspired millions, yes, but actually changed the course of a game, the beautiful game. In this episode, we will be talking about Les Murray, because Les really is SBS's Don Bradman. Hi, my name is Christoph Mallet, and I'll be your host for this final episode in this series of Who's Your Don Bradman. Let's start, like every episode, with the story of our icon, Les Murray. This is the story of Urge Laszlo, or better known in Australia as Les Murray. Born in Hungary in 1945, Les Murray's early years were spent in his home country until the young Laszlo followed his family and immigrated to Australia. They settled in Wollongong after a short time in an immigration camp near Wagga Wagga. Les Murray joined a football club in Sydney and played several years with the St. George Budapest. In 1960, the European Cup final between the great Real Madrid and Frankfurt was a revelation for Les Murray. 70 million people watched the final. And this match is still today widely regarded as one of the greatest football match ever played. And it also remains as the highest scoring final of the history of the competition. That, by the way, saw Real Madrid win it by 7-3. But this was it. Les Murray was hooked once and for all, and he was certain he was going to work in football. And why not as a journalist? In 1980, after several roles in the Fairfax Group, an opportunity arose to join SBS Television as an Hungarian language subtitler. But very quickly, he worked and carried the SBS football coverage, a role he kept for many years.
If you're a soccer fan, there's a pretty good chance you'll have to put up with my face on this screen more often than you think.
He was known as Mr. Football and was at the helm of 8 Football World Cup for SBS.
Good evening again. Buonasera from Rome.
And welcome to USA 94, the first day of the biggest sporting feast in human history.
You join us at a poignant moment in Australia's footballing history, where after a 32-year wait, Australia will walk on the pitch behind me, face the sun, and engage in a game of football that will captivate all in our country like few other events have done before.
Les Murray was inducted in the Football Australia Hall of Fame in 2003 and was awarded a Member of the Order of Australia in 2006 for his service to football as a radio and television producer, journalist and presenter. Sadly, Les Murray lost his last duel with cancer on July 31st, 2017. He was 71. So this was the story of Les Murray. Some say luck is about being at the right place at the right time. But success is also what you do with it, and luck is only the beginning. Les Murray did not have a fortunate upbringing in the first part of his life. Trapped in a country his parents wanted to escape, he was from a loving family that did not want to comply with the regime and the repression that was in place at the time in Hungary. And this is explained by Les himself in a special episode of Dateline on SBS, where he made the emotional journey back to his roots.
Well, when the revolution broke out on October 23, all our hopes rose. The revolution was crushed and all the hopes were extinguished. Some of them were defiant, like my father, You know, he opened his big mouth a few times and other people, but the general population was very, very intimidated. There were secrets kept very, very tightly. Nobody who was involved in such conspiracies as helping defectors ever spoke about them again because they were fearful of retributions.
At the time, Australia was celebrating hosting its first Olympics ever in Melbourne, 1956. Les's family was plotting a journey out, a journey that would take them to the shores of Australia, a journey that would change the course of life, a journey that would get a nation to fall in love with the beautiful game. Les remembered all his life the people that helped him, and more noticeably, the man responsible for their passage, a man named Julius, someone he tried to track down again for this special episode of Dateline on SBS.
Julius seemed very honest and sincere. He was a typical country boy, and I know he was decent in the way he stopped his father from taking my mother's coat as part payment, and simply the way he took care of us. When he led us on the walk to the border, he held my hand and my little brother Joe's hand. He was the ultimate professional when it came to helping us through this danger. Julius, what about you?
If you'd had a chance to speak to him, what would you have said?
I would have said thank you. And that is all. And then I would have had a beer with him maybe and talk about the times, 56, the adventures, the risks, and about his life since then.
So when Les Murray and his family arrived in Australia, they simply had nothing. They landed near Darwin and were placed in a centre near Wagga Wagga before settling in Sydney, as explained by Tanya, Les's daughter.
So my dad migrated from Hungary in 1956, and when he came over here, he had nothing except his love for football. He left his language, he left his food, he left his mates, and he had none of that over here. So he fell heavily and relied heavily on football for his joy. He would listen to it on the radio, and so he understands that people that come here from, you know, most other parts of the world have a huge, they love football way more than they do in Australia, and it's their absolute life. So, you know, he understands that how much hope and joy and company football can bring to people that are in new surroundings, that, you know, you don't need to speak the language to understand what the game looks like on TV. And he was really, really much a part of joining different communities together through the language of football. And that's what he was all about. And that's very much a reason why he also sort of got on that pro-refugee course, because he understands that refugees that come here, they can also make a difference in football. You've got great players, you've got people that grew up on it over there, wherever they've come from, and they can find relief in watching the game here. So he wanted just people find joy in football when they're suffering, and that is something that he very much wanted to make possible to migrants that come to Australia.
So everyone agreed these days that Les Murray was paramount in establishing the beautiful game in Australia. Held by his route as a migrant from Europe, the way he migrated to Australia resonated with millions, as Craig Foster explains.
You know, what he brought to the game and brought to the country as a refugee was all incredibly important. Of course, at his heart, the most important thing I think about Les was that he was a believer in the game, that he believed before it became cool, he believed before it became prominent, before it became mainstream. He broadcast the game and put his reputation and name behind the game before so many in Australia believed at the time when it was WOG ball. You know, now it's Australia ball. And for that, we all always remember him, you know, extremely fondly.
After passing, Les left a football family behind, but also his own family and a wife, Sida. We all love Sida at SBS. She was part of the SBS family way before meeting Les.
That's a funny story. I met Les through Johnny Warren. Johnny Warren was organizing a get together. Like, I don't know if it was a birthday party, his birthday party on a boat, a cruise boat on a Darling Harbour. I don't know if it was his birthday or if he was going away on holiday and he was having a kind of get together before he was going away. And he invited me to come to this party on the boat. And I went there and I didn't know anyone. And once I was there, there was lots of people there. And he just approached Liz and said, "Oh, Liz, I would like to meet Sida." And he said, "Sida, this is Liz, my dear friend." And then we start to talk and we start to talk and we could not stop talking all night. I mean, wasn't all night. It was like a 3 hours cruise around the harbor. And at the end of the cruise, Liz asked for my contact. I gave him my number. And then 3 days later, he called and he said, "Oh, that was marvelous to meet you. And, you know, if you have time, we can catch up for a drink." And then after a few days later, he called me again and I met him for a drink. And then the rest is history, you know. So we just got together and we started to date. And yeah, that was like there was a very, very amazing connection. By the time we saw each other in that boat, you know, he starts to contact me. We start to go out and the feeling starts to grow and it was beautiful and it was pure love, you know. And then 6 months later, we start to live together. And that was the most beautiful relationship I ever had. And we had a fantastic time together. Amazing man, a man with a great heart. And he was a very dedicated partner and I deeply miss him a lot.
At this stage, I would like just to take a minute to thank Sida for taking the time to talk to us about Les. I know it's never an easy time for you, Sida, around the World Cup time. And I would like to say on behalf of SBS and SBS Sport that we deeply love you, Sida. So as we heard, Sida mentioned the name of Johnny Warren. So it's important to mention how powerful the bond was between Johnny and Les. They were mates. They were brothers.
They were great friends and, you know, they were great mates. They did a few World Cup together. They worked together a long time and they had a beautiful friendship. And Liz was heartbroken when Johnny was diagnosed with cancer and, you know, facing the battle of the, you know, with the cancer. And when Johnny died, Liz was devastated, you know, because he lost his dear friend. And they shared lots of good times together on those big, when they were traveling, you know, in those World Cups, when there was always a good time to share a good laugh. That was amazing.
Well, they're emotional. The names bring up great affection and emotions through the wonderful memories that we all shared. You know, there are many, many others. You know, Andrew Osati and Cole Patterson was there when I first started. And of course, then we went on to have, you know, Lucy Zelich and Mariana Rudan was there and Elizabeth Jones and Tom Alaris and, you know, Andy Pascalides. And you know, the list just goes on. They're wonderful, wonderful people who made a very significant contribution to an organisation that is so fundamental to Australian culture today. And they believed in multiculturalism. They all came, unlike myself, who was an Anglo kid from the country. The vast majority of them came from, you know, our various multicultural communities. They understood inherently what SBS was bringing to Australia through the multilingualism, you know, respect for different and multicultures, even in the same family and in the same communities. They brought that to life through their language, through their respect for pronunciations, for example, that Les was famous for. They embodied a different face of Australia that, you know, was diametrically opposed to, you know, all of the white faces that we saw across you know, all of the commercial television. You know, the SBS brought a Hungarian refugee to the attention of Australian public, to prominence, and ultimately to the great affection of the Australian people in Laszlo Urge, who had to change his name, he felt, as a young man, a young refugee, to Les Murray. So the contribution of all those people is really profound. Of course, the contribution to Australian football that we see today, a game of many, many millions playing, World Cup broadcasts, which routinely have, you know, 15 to 20 million viewers cumulatively over the month, you know, 3 million plus viewers watching quarterfinals, semifinals, and the Socceroos games, you know, on a 4 year you know, revolving basis. And their contribution to the game that we see here today, and the beautiful tapestry of both national teams, Matildas and Socceroos, but particularly our young African Australian faces and South Sudanese refugees in Awa Mabil and Thomas Deng and Garang Kuol and these young stars coming through. All of that, SBS is very much at the heart of not just the growth of Australian football, but the understanding of the Australian people of the game, the affection that tens of millions of Australians have for the game of football, and of their love of diversity. And that is really the key. SBS did never just simply broadcast the game. We broadcasted the game in a way that was communicating to Australia very clearly that we love all colours, we love all peoples, we love all cultures, all communities in Australia. We respect them. You know, we put them on air. We put those different faces on air. We speak in a different way. We dress in a different way. You know, we are deeply multicultural, and this to Australia is what multiculturalism means.
Les made an imprint within the roots of Australian football. And who better than Graham Arnold and Ange Postecoglou to tell us about Les?
Yeah, look, I think his contribution has been second to none in the country. When everyone gave up on the sport and everyone in the old NSL days didn't think the sport had a real future in this country, you know, SBS and Les Murray were, you know, they were beating the drum for the code. And he's got, I think, due recognition over that time worldwide with FIFA and from the people that he's met over the time with the respect that they've given Les. And I've got nothing but the utmost respect for the guy. I think he's been truly magnificent for Australian football. And I know Johnny Warren was the same, that you know, without a true believer in a person like Les Murray, SBS probably would have given up the ghost years ago, and the football would never have been on mainstream TV, or wouldn't be in the position it is today. And you know, it wasn't until I got in the national team in the mid-80s that Les Murray, who had a very, very good relationship with Frank Arrock, that was so fanatical and passionate about football and Australian soccer and the Socceroos, that he was every day at training with the national team, and he, you know, he was reporting the game by himself, and you could pick up the newspapers and you wouldn't even know the Socceroos were playing in town, but Les Murray made everyone know that we were playing.
From my perspective, having lived all my football life in this country, it's been fantastic to see where we've come from, and it's always important to remember that the people there at the start were the important ones that drove that on.
So, as we prepare to watch another World Cup, how would Les be preparing now? What would be his rituals? Tanya, his daughter, tell us about it.
Well, it was similar in that Dad was, you know, he'd been doing what he does for so long, or what he did for so long, that the wheels were well oiled, and it was never stressful. It was more so exciting, and he knew the process every single World Cup gearing up for it. So he would, of course, be a lot busier. He was doing a lot of preparation. He was doing a lot more interviews, that sort of thing. But it was just something that my sister and I, from the moment that we were born, it was part of our life. It was part of the culture. We didn't know any different. So it was like this rotating thing that would come around every 4 years, and then also every, you know, second years after that with the Euro. It was an exciting time. But, I mean, to be honest with you, when my sister and I were younger, we didn't get the game, and it was certainly it wasn't forced upon us at all. There was no disappointment or anything like that from our dad that we weren't really jumping out of our skin to watch the World Cup. But as Natalie and I became teenagers, that interest was born and it grew. And then, we would start communicating with our dad throughout the World Cup, wherever he was, asking him, you know, what's going on with this team? What's going on with that team? What do you think of this? What do you think of that? And so, as we grew up, on behalf of my sister and I, it became more and more exciting. But Dad was, you know, he would go a bit quiet. He was particularly with the World Cups where the Socceroos were competing. He would get a bit nervous, but he would never sort of show any real upset when they got knocked out with us personally. You know, he was like, this is the game, this is the way that the referees work, you know, this is what happens. He wasn't into VR at all, video reffing at all. He liked the romance of the game when it was played the old school way, and he believes that the referee's decision is the referee's decision and you just gotta like it or lump it. So yeah, that's
It was like watching or experiencing a World Cup with an historian. He'd been around so long and seen so much and had such a sharp memory. It was a real privilege.
We know a lot about Les as a public man. We have seen countless videos about him. We read countless number of articles. But how was Les Murray in the real life? When the mics and the cameras were turned off? When Les was simply a husband or a dad?
Les, as the father, was first and foremost a best mate. This is my sister and I, my sister would agree. Once Natalie and I got to a certain age, it's really pivotal for me. You realise that your mum and dad aren't bulletproof. They're actually just a guy and a girl living their lives the best way that they can, same as myself. So at that point, that was like when I was a teenager, and my relationship with Dad changed then, and he was somebody who really encouraged my sister and myself just to be who we are and to follow our dreams, and whatever our passions were, he supported that. So, you know, we had a great connection, Dad and I, with music, and that was very much a part of our bond. He was extremely wise, the wisest person I've ever met, and people were attracted to that. And I was so humbled by the fact that he was my dad. You know, he was always Les Murray. He was very, very popular, but anyone that meets him will say that it was not just about being popular because of who he was with football. He was a very warm, very loyal, respectful person. And those were the values that he, you know, he put into myself and my sister as we were growing up. So he was there as someone that guided us, but he was also there as a mate that was completely silly, loved to let his hair down. So there was this perfect combination of what I think was an amazing father, and, you know, I still think of him as being here. And as a husband, he was extremely loyal and loving, very romantic. He's an extremely romantic guy. They say you end up marrying your father, and I'm about to get married, and I can see so many of those qualities in my fiance, and I couldn't be happier, because my dad was an amazing presence, and to have him as part of my family is just, it's such a blessing. I'm so honoured and happy to be able to get on air today and talk about my dad. It's not something that everyone gets to do, and so I'm really thankful for having me here today.
It is undeniable to this day that 2006 was the pinnacle of Les's work, with Australia qualifying again for the World Cup after more than 30 years and delivering on the words of Johnny Warren, the famous "I told you so." It was a fantastic adventure for Les, as Sida, his wife, and Craig Foster explain.
That was very important because it was a very hard work for him to promote football in Australia together with Johnny Warren. And because, you know, Johnny Warren was the football player, and Les was the broadcaster, the journalist, the outspoken about as well. And he found very difficult at the moment, because he said, oh, you know, this is the country where everybody talks about cricket and rugby, and we have to make sure that people also understand that the round ball is the world game, you know, the game that plays everywhere in the world. And why not in Australia? And he was very persistent on that. And he did lots of speeches, lots of traveling, talking about. And eventually, you know, people start to get more and more interested about. And once Australia got qualified to the World Cup in 2006, that was the most important moment in the lives of all the Australians, you know, especially Les, Johnny, Craig Foster, Lucy, all those people involved in football. There was such an important moment. And he was like a child in a lolly shop when Australia got qualified to the World Cup. I have never seen someone so happy. And you know, and when we went to Berlin for the World Cup, there was so much excitement in his heart, his life, and him and Craig Foster working together in Berlin as well. I remember in 2006 was a great World Cup. And
I'd probably say the Italy game in 2006. And the reason is because I experienced that with Les. It was a moment when, of course, the game, the draw against Croatia to get through the group, you know, in having not been there for three decades, to get to the round of 16, I'm not sure many Australians understood how quite incredible that was at the time. We certainly did. And so the emotion after that game against Croatia was, you know, was very difficult to deal with on air. But the Italy game was different. It was a great trauma, you know, so late in the game for a penalty to be given to Italy, and Francesco Totti, of course, scored it. And Les and I were in the bowels of the stadium in Germany, preparing ourselves for a post-game brief chat about extra time and what Australia's chances were. And if I remember, we still had a one substitute that was unused, and we were starting to, you know, think about the next steps. And all of a sudden, so late in the game, this happened, a penalty was given. And I don't remember a moment particularly fondly, because Australia had an opportunity to go through to the quarterfinal, which would be just unbelievable, you know. So here we are, you know, 16 years later, still hoping and praying to be able to just get out of the group again. But what I remember is the emotion on Les. And this is what football is all about and what World Cups are about. It is a level of collective energy, love, passion, emotion, and trauma that only football can bring. And in that moment when we came back on air and they started counting down, and we were out now, and this had only happened in a kind of a two-minute period, and we'd gone from a great high to, you know, the most intense low, and they were saying 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, we're going to air, and I couldn't look at Les because I knew both of us were going to break down. And we sat on air commiserating and trying to somehow make sense of this incredible emotional misery that we knew Australians were feeling back home. And it was one of my most difficult but memorable moments ever on air. I just wasn't actually quite sure if I was going to be able to get something out, if I was going to be able to talk. But living through that with Les is really emblematic of what the football experience and the football life is about. That's actually what it is, you know, and it always reminds me of the power of the World Cup, the emotion of, you know, the greatest sporting tournament that's ever been invented, and also of what might happen one day when either the Matildas or the Socceroos actually succeed and exceed the 2006. So if we make the quarterfinal, I just wonder what that emotion is going to be like. And if we make a semi-final, I'm just not sure that the country is ready to deal with that. If we one day ever make a final, then, you know, having looked into Les's face at that moment, it gives me a fair sense of how all of our multicultural communities and the millions of people who love football are going to respond. It's going to be something that the country's never seen before.
So in the end, something special must have kept Les wanting more, forever wanting more. What was his secret? What was the magic potion?
What I remember Les always said to me, he used to call me Bebe. He used to say to me, I used to ask him because we spent 14 and a half years together, living together. And I always was fascinated about his passion. You know, I have never seen someone wake up to go to work and wake up singing and happy. And I say to him, can you please tell me what's the secret for working for such a long time? You know, he worked at SBS 34 years. And I said, you know, there is a secret there. How come someone can work such a long time for the same place, doing the same job, and still have this passion? He said, you just said the word. The word is passion. I am passionate for what I do. I love my job. And that's why I always wake up happy to do this beautiful work I love, you know. And he was an incredible person. He loved his job. He loved his family and his grandchildren. So we miss him.
We are all missing Les in our own ways. But what we can be sure of and proud of from everyone at SBS is that Les left a mark on football in Australia. The game has evolved so much since the early days, as mentioned by Craig Foster.
The social capital, if you like, of football in Australia has changed a great deal. I think along with the immigration history of the country. So the game was brought to these shores by British migrants back in the 1800s, and they largely informed the first clubs, whether that was in Illawarra or up in Newcastle in New South Wales. Post-Second World War, the game really started to be energised by Southern European migrants and who built their own clubs and started to integrate into Australian society through their love of football. That brought a whole range of challenges, along with the challenges that Australia's always experienced in its immigration history. That is the demonisation of many communities who were newly arrived, racism that those communities experienced over many, many decades, and repeatedly, and I would say cyclically. And the game of football experienced the same type of prejudice coming to be so directly related to or synonymous with our immigrant communities. That's the beauty and the strength of the game that also presented an immense challenge. Today, particularly after the Socceroos had re-qualified after 32 years in 2006 for Germany, which reignited and united the feeling and love between, you know, tens of millions of Australians for the game of football, and brought out this almost at that time latent passion from so many of our beautiful communities across Australia. Today, the game has been culturally embedded into Australian way of life. The nature of Australia's relationship with the game has changed in that respect. Every Australian today has lived through not just one FIFA World Cup, as so many Australians did back in 1974, but in fact multiple World Cups and heading into their fifth straight. So World Cup participation for the Australian male national team, and of course the Matildas have long been participating in World Cups since at least 1995, this regular World Cup participation has placed the game onto a different level of social consciousness, acceptance and passion.
So the question is, today, how should we remember Les?
Dad would want to be remembered first and foremost as a fan, and that is what he was from start to finish. It was at the core of what he did, and he did all of this because he's a huge fan and he wants to share the love. He was very much attracted to the beauty and the tragedy of the game. As I said before, he was a very romantic person, and when you would have the World Cup final and you'd have the winner on one side you'd have a team that was in this euphoric state of the highest of highs, and the other side you'd have the team that was experiencing the lowest of lows. And he found that fascinating, visually, emotionally, and I think throughout the course of his career, he would spend a lot of time talking about the tragedy as well as the beauty, and the, you know, the loser as well as the winner. And that sort of was at the core of why he was a fan. He was fascinated by that. So, yeah, to answer your question, first and foremost, he was a fan, and I think that's how he would like people to remember him.
Everything he did was with love and passion, and that's the way he would like to be remembered. You know, and he always said to me, very important in life, you never forget those three words, baby. Love, faith, and trust, you know, and that's the way that people should live life, and don't forget about these three words and keep going.
So there you have it. We are very proud to close our last episode in this series of Who's Your Don Bradman with the legacy of Les Murray. I hope you enjoy listening as much as we enjoy making it for you. And on behalf of my producer, Dario Castaldo, who helped me produce the whole series and this particular episode, on behalf of SBS Radio, of SBS Sport and SBS as a whole, I would like to say thank you, and I leave you with a song. Yes, a song by Les Murray. Long live a beautiful game.
Mesdames et messieurs, Mr. Les Murray.
Volare, oh, e cantare, oh.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.